Good afternoon, everyone.
We're on?
It's the captain's table. It's back on after another hiatus.
Well, you know, with the high salaries that we're on now, we do need our holidays.
We like our holidays.
Yeah, indeed.
So, 4 weeks of, what did you do much of? Watch New Zealand beat England in the cricket?
So we finished that off. Because New Zealand's probably in their best situation ever in cricket. Well, I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
Presumably you're number one in the world, are you?
In 1 day and 5 day, and we're third in T20. So, yes, we're pretty close.
I think they're number one in New Zealand.
Well, that's right.
They're very good indeed.
No, I'll tell you what, we have to do that when we can, because we've had some bad times, believe me, with our cricket. But we've got a big final coming up on Friday. Rex, we've got the World Test Finals.
In Southampton.
In Southampton, that mega dome there. Mm. So, I'm very excited.
That'll be brilliant.
Very brilliant.
You've been busy watching the cricket, building up New Zealand. Mm-hmm. Let's get back to business at
back
the
to
table.
Business. Showtime.
We've got a guest today called Jawad Ashraf. He used to work at The Entertainer, and he is the Chief Technical Officer and co-founder at a company called Terra Virtua. For us, being not particularly up to speed on tech, a lot of people chat about tech. We thought we'd get Jawad in just to basically give us what the climate's like in the modern world, especially in Dubai, where we shot, you know, everyone just flocks of bright, shiny things, talking of blockchain, talking of crypto, talking of NFTs, all these things. So, Ashraf, Mr. Ashraf, what I'm suggesting or asking Jawad, is say he's going to just tell us a few things and bring us up to speed on that for us and our listeners. Are you good with that?
Oh, no, absolutely. And I'm really excited. And thank you, Jawad. Welcome
to the table.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Right. Yeah. What the fuck's an NFT?
Okay. All right. So that was like a question. That was like a question that we were asked like for the last 3 years. Right. So it was like basically, what the fuck is an NFT? It sounds like a skin disease, right? It is a non-fungible token, is what it stands for. So you straight away you assume that it's like something you need a rash, you need a cream for. Yeah. But now everyone has been talking about, you know, in TV, on the radio, everywhere else, people are talking about NFTs. It's pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And what a non-fungible token is, I mean, in a really simplistic way.
Because please do that, because I'm thinking of Rob Marinelli, one of our star listeners, who's on his bike in Switzerland now, listening. I think we've got to break this way back. Let's simplify to the simple part.
Let me run it back. Okay, so basically, first of all, everyone's got an idea what an NFT is. So like our company, we set it up back in 2018, and there we were trying to explain to everyone what an NFT is. Now everything we do is what it isn't, because people now assume an NFT is something on the internet or blockchain or crypto, and it's linked with celebrities, and it's something which is millions and millions of dollars. That's what people
assume. I mean, admittedly, it's not a particularly sexy term, is it? A fungible token, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, but that's a technical term. Because the thing is, in crypto, I mean, look, what people in crypto don't get at the moment is that no one cares about the tech. When you're doing it in that purchase, no one cares how it works. Mm. But in crypto, there's a propensity to talk about a lot about the tech.
Yeah, right.
Really, if it's going to be adopted by anyone, you've got to forget about that. You've got to think about what it does for you, which is what it doesn't. And with that, I'll go back to what an NFT is.
Okay.
Now, if you roll back in the day, you know, like, you could buy a book. It was collectible. You owned it.
Yes.
Right? You could sell it. And the creator got
physical book.
And then if you sold the book, in the first place, the creator would get a revenue. But then after that, there was a grey market. They could resell it and they wouldn't see anymore. But it was still yours.
Yes.
And you could sell it. A book. You could do that with an album. You could do that with a movie.
Yes.
Right? So that's how we grew up. You know, like, and like, I'm a collector. I'm a big geek myself. I've been collecting comics since I was 10. Right? And it was all about trading, and it was all about owning and knowing how much things were worth. Then what happened was that as the internet came along and everything moved to digital, creators and brands didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to move across to digital, and that opened up an opportunity for the likes of Spotify and Netflix and Amazon to go to an all-you-can-eat model. So basically, if you buy a book from Amazon, you don't own it. You do own it, but you can't sell it. Okay.
Yeah. If you, the online version we're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So let's say you have the Kindle, you download it's gone digital, right?
Yeah.
You can't really resell it. It's not there. You can lend it like a library, you can, to a friend, but you can't do that. And there's no value in it anymore. You've spent the same amount, but you don't have any value.
And they could even potentially say, you get this for a year, and then we're going to cut it off, and then you lose it.
They wouldn't, but what they would do is lock you into an ecosystem. So for you to be on that, I have to own the Kindle, and you've got to do it. So now going from a book to a digital book, what's happened is that because it's the only way through, the creators have been slowly marginalized over the years, so they get less money, okay? Because that's really where you've got to go. And you saw with Amazon, all these publishing houses were like fighting with them and refusing to put their books on, but everyone's capitulated. That's books. Yes. Then you've got the story with movies, where now it's all Netflix, it's all streaming. You don't own it, you subscribe. The second you turn off your subscription, you don't have it.
Yes.
And like you have music, same thing. Spotify, Apple Music, you rent it. And what's happened when that's happened is that all the value is lessened and lessened for the creators. They get less and less and less over time.
Sure.
Now, what NFTs are, it's bringing it back. Really, easiest thing. It's something digital, you own it, and it's a limited quantity. And it's authenticated. So, for example, if I buy... So, Terra Virtua, we launched the world's first NFT graphic novel a couple of weeks ago. And it was an artist called Nick Percival. He's done stuff for Judge Dredd, Hellraiser, amazing stuff. And he had a graphic novel he painted. Took him 2 years. Beautiful, beautiful graphic novel. And what would have happened was that it would have just been published and in a bookshop and no one had seen it, or it would have gone to suck it down the internet and subscribe. Instead, he published it as an NFT. And he created a special edition with 1,000 copies, which are 1 to 1,000, right? Of which are sold for X amount, right? But we created a reader that would allow someone to buy it as an NFT, but then read it like a graphic novel. But they can trade it.
And they own it and keep it.
They own it and keep it. But then they can go to OpenSea or Terra Virtua or anywhere else, because we're open, and they can just go and trade it. So now when they sell it, they make money off it. So now your asset, which is just like a physical comic, is something you can buy and sell. But the beauty of an NFT is when you sell it again, the creator gets another little bit of a kickback. Oh. So it means that the creator always gets rewarded. And really, that's what one of our main things is, we want the creators to get paid for what they do. Because right now, creators have become commodities, right?
So just going back a step. Okay, we've got 1,000 comic books that have been sold. Exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. 1 of 1,000, 2 of 1,000, 3 of 1,000.
Yeah.
Does 1 of 1,000 have a different price to 999 of 1,000?
No, because let's say that you publish...
It's the same thing.
Let's say you do a print run,
okay,
and they make 1,000 copies of that graphic novel. Everyone is the same price. And once they're gone,
everything is the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
Once they're gone, they're gone. But the thing you can do with an NFT is when you read it on the reader, the tech we create, you can read the comic. Then you can press a button, you can remove the bubbles. Press a button, then you go through to the inks. Press a button, you go through the pencils. So you now can actually dive into a digital asset and see something that you can't see in the real world. It's not just taking something from physical to digital, but if it's going to be of any use, do something interesting with it. And that's what we're trying to do. Innovate, right? Okay. So like, for example, we got an exclusive partnership with Legendary Pictures. And what we did, Godzilla versus Kong, we did dual branding with this major movie studio. 50 million people looked at the trailer. And then we did major co-branding, and then they gave us the cinema footage. All the CGI, all the models. And then what we did was, all right, it's not just going to be an NFT of a picture. Let's create a 3D model of Godzilla based upon the footage that you can buy, trade, but you can view through your mobile phone. And you can see in your room, and people were sending us the craziest videos I made of Godzilla trying to kickbox somebody.
Right.
And then also we created the marketplace and the VR and the AR and a 3D place. So when you buy your stuff, you can walk into your own room and put your stuff on the walls. It's NFTs are about taking something, earning money from it, owning it, and it being permanent. So really the fundamental bit, you know, we've created a wider ecosystem, and NFT is bringing digital back home to you, right? Everything else so far has been in the interim, and it rewards creators.
I get it completely. Now, let me throw, because where we come from, what we do is we look at how we can relate that to the real world, to physical assets. Mm. For example, artwork. They may be created digitally, but what about existing artwork that then is created into a digital version
and then resold.
Okay, well, the best example of that is if you look at the best real world example I give you, let's say that you go to the Rembrandt Museum.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. When you go to the museum shop, one of the main ways museums keep in business is selling postcards that they do seasonally based upon the original artwork.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, that's copyright is owned by the museum itself.
Yeah.
And they've got the right to make digital, the right to make physical postcards from it.
Yes.
In this case, an NFT would be a digital print run.
Yeah.
Right? So that's as simple as that.
It's exactly the same. It's a, so it relates to a physical asset, which then becomes a digital asset. The ownership model is exactly
it's
the same.
It's a model is exactly the same. The only difference is that on resale, the creators get paid. And that's the thing. You just take away all the technology garbage and just focus on the utility. And the utility is you own it, you can trade it, and creators get paid all along the way.
And we're going to see and hear more and more of that. So I know we've got so much to cover.
Mm.
I don't have to ask any more now about what the fuck is an NFT because I get it completely. So thank you for that.
No problem.
We were talking earlier on about the model for paying for it.
Mm.
That could be in cryptocurrency, for example.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole world of information that probably a lot of people want to hear a bit more about and what we were talking about. Let's just start off with cryptocurrency and say, look, why are there so many more currencies? Why are there so many more things happening? Can you give us a background on that?
Yeah.
And if people want to invest in it, buyer beware, caveat emptor, and all that kind of stuff. But can you just kind of guide us through in the simplest way in terms of what is it, why are there many more out there, and how can we avoid the pitfalls, the pratfalls and the difficult parts of it in terms of from a layman's perspective?
Okay, so basically crypto coins are broken into broad categories.
Okay.
You've got the main tokens, and then you've got the alternative tokens, the altcoins.
Okay.
Altcoins are the ones that you see constantly springing up. The best real-world example I can give you is compare something to the stock exchange and small penny stocks.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, with a penny stock, you can get a multiplier, which is huge, but you're taking more of a pun on the company.
Yeah.
That's what an altcoin is. And you see penny stock companies come and go. But they're there, right? So that you can buy them. And they've got two very different markets that they're operating. Crypto itself is completely decentralized. So you've got the main coins, which are like the Bitcoins and the Ethereums of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Bitcoin you can think of as the gold.
Ripple, XRP, Ripple?
Yeah, I mean, you've got Ripple, you've got Matic, you've got Elrond. There's a whole bunch. But the number one and two, I mean, like if you go to CoinGecko, for example, it rates on the coins. And Bitcoin is, think of Bitcoin as a value store. And think of Ethereum as the oil that runs the crypto. That's what it is. So you're investing in two types of asset, one which is like a gold and the other is oil. But you need oil to operate most of what is on crypto. So that's why. But Bitcoin is a finite amount of supply, but Ethereum has more generated every year, not a huge amount, okay, but more is generated every year.
So I'm going to take it a step back. Some of these people, some of our listeners will be wondering why are there new currencies coming into play?
Yeah.
How does that come about? Because there is no enforcement, there's no compliance. How does this come about?
Okay, give you an example. So our company, Terra Virtua, our currency is called TVK.
Yeah.
Okay. Terra Virtua Collect. Now, in our case, it's a coin which is a utility token, which think of it like a rewards token.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you buy it from the exchange and you lock up so much, so the way that it happens in crypto is that you, when you buy a token, if you stake it, you still own it, but you lock it for X amount of time. Think of a deposit in a bond account.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you do that, you get perks. So basically, if you've got a platform that does something, if you buy their token and you stake it in certain ways, you can earn more of that token, which has got value, or you can earn rewards. So we've got a thing called a Prestige Club, which is coming out soon. And when you have, when you stake your tokens at different levels, you go to like bronze, gold, platinum.
Mm-hmm.
And like when you go to platinum, you'll get these perks. You might be able to see artwork and buy it before anybody else. You might be And so those altcoins, these other tokens, have benefits on their ecosystem.
Okay.
Yeah. And different companies have got different utilities. So one might be focused on finance, one might be focused on trading. And so if you own their token, you'll get a reduced price on trading fees. Like if you go to Binance, for example, one of the biggest exchanges in the world, if you buy their token, BNB, and own it, then you have a reduced charge for trading.
Okay.
So you'd buy just to, and hold it in your account, so you get reduced charge on trading, it saves you money. But the more that you hold, the less people can buy, the more the price goes up.
Right, so it's
driven, it's all supply and demand.
Sure.
Okay, that's all it
but,
is.
But you could start a currency. Like we could start the Captain's Table currency.
Yeah, but you need... The thing is, a lot of people have a lot of ideas about currency, but it's got to have a global use case.
Sure, right?
It's got to have some, because like ultimately, it's like anything else. If it's a piece of crap, no one will buy it. I mean, there's even been an escort token, for God's sake.
Right.
You know, it's ridiculous ideas coming down the mill. And often some of them, like this whole Dogecoin thing.
I was just thinking of
that one. That was just...
But it worked, didn't it?
It was just a thing for suckers. I mean, at the end of the day, if something's going like this, ultimately it's going to drop. It's got no utility, no use, and somebody's going to get hurt on the journey.
Sure.
And what tends to happen is that people often, when they invest, you know, you go to barbecues, people talk about it. You're trying to catch a tiger by the tail.
Yeah, it's already out. Exactly.
And the people who try to grab it at the end. I mean, if by the time people are already deep into it, you're the person going into anything. You're the one. It's normally the last one in. First is going to be the one who's hurt the most.
So, from a small investor's standpoint, what would your position be?
Yeah.
Or I mean, you could.
Okay. What I would always say is that look, the main thing about crypto is that a lot of money have made money in crypto over the years. So a lot of money in crypto is money going in circles in a closed ecosystem.
Mm.
And that drives up the price. And often one project feeds another project, feeds another project.
Mm.
So when you try to invest, think, does this thing have a real world use outside of a bull run? Because once in 2017, 2018, when the market collapsed, it went for 3 years, but there were no decent projects. But there are actually some incredible projects out. I mean, ours is an incredible project, Terra Virtua. You know, we're revolutionizing print, music, movies, and sports. But then you've got fantastic DeFi projects coming out. And by decent DeFi, I mean decentralized finance.
Mm.
So everything that you see at the moment, like you go to a bank, you go to an insurance company, centralized as an organization where you buy and you sell and you use buy services. Decentralized finance is buying that without a middleman. Buy insurance without a middleman. Get a mortgage, get funding, get lending without a middleman. Without someone in there trying to squeeze you and trying to take a cut of what's happening.
Flip the ticket.
So that's what DeFi is about. And there's more and more wonderful projects coming out. There's and there's also great infrastructure plays coming out which are allowing you to do cool stuff. Like, let's take a simple example.
Yeah.
Let's take medicine from origination of the factory to the door. As multiple elements of the supply chain, right? And at any point in the supply chain, it can substitute for fakes. Blockchain itself, the way that you need to look at it, cryptocurrencies are to blockchain what email is for the internet. People get confused between the two. Blockchain is something that can run lots of tech.
Yes.
And so like with blockchain, I mean, just think about the supply chain management. You can basically make sure there's no fraud. You know, there's all sorts of application utilities. So when you invest, look at a company and look at what it can do.
Mm.
So like you've got the likes of Matic, which are Polygon, and they are a new blockchain. They're very green. Okay. And also all of the DeFi projects have moved to them. Then you've got projects like Casper Labs, and they're coming big into Dubai. You know, they're here. We have a Saeed. He's a CEO. He's based in Abu Dhabi, and he's spearheading it. And they're doing a lot of stuff here with Dubai government. And they're looking to bring a whole load of features into the UAE with the benefits of blockchain.
So there's a lot of reading to be done here, though, from you know, and we have to try and navigate our way around what is really quite a complex thing. And whilst you'll simplify it by saying, make sure that what you're buying is, you know, is it of use?
Yeah.
Is it of note? Is it, you know, sustainable?
Yeah.
And I get that, but there's still a lot of reading and information to try, but
in the real world, if you were to invest in a stock, you do your reading.
Absolutely.
The problem is people just think, oh my God, it's going. And FOMO kicks in.
Yeah.
Of course
it is. Oh no, I'm going to jump in.
Yeah.
But that's how people get hurt. We always say, do your research, because honestly, you know, we've all been there.
And you get
excited.
Obvious question is, where do you start to look for that?
And that's where I was going to go. Great question.
Where can we find out more? I mean, obviously, apart from yourselves.
So let's give an example. Jane, who may be from Jumeirah, maybe not, Not sure.
Or Karen. Yeah, from Jumeirah.
She's got 5,000 or 10,000 dirhams that she's heard this crypto is a great idea. What does she do?
I'll tell her not to touch it with a stick.
All right, we're cut, Ted.
Thanks very much indeed. Great evening.
No.
Catch you in a week or two.
No, honestly, it's like, would you invest in the stock exchange, right, if you had $5,000 and you didn't know the first thing about stocks? It just makes no sense, okay?
But the problem is that Karen or Jane was at a barbecue with Sharon and she heard that her husband's made X amount and she's come home and she's gone, we got to get into this. Have you heard what these guys are doing? So this is the problem.
Look, if they wanted to look for sources that are good, they should be looking at Cointelegraph, for example.
Okay.
All right? Cointelegraph is a website which reports all the latest information around it, which isn't somebody just shilling an idea.
Right.
Or on Facebook. It's almost like the Financial Times of crypto. Yeah. That's a good place to start.
Mm.
But the problem, just like you have with Facebook, it's full of disinformation and social... Mm. And this with... People have got agendas to try to push up the value of a token by actually making people engaged in it.
Mm.
They get enough people interested in it, the price goes up. Up and they exit, leaving people holding the bag. People were doing that with penny stocks for years.
Or multi-level marketing.
Exactly, exactly. And I genuinely, my, you know, this isn't a mature enough market for the end user investor to go into and not risk a lot.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
Make sure you understand. Make sure you've done your research, and only if you're reasonably certain, go in. But then look at, you know, like, if I was to invest, of course, Terra Virtue, of course, I would say, but we're at a good price point. We went from 1.3 cents to all the way up to $1.20. Now we're sitting at 15 cents, and there's lots coming. But even so, we're doing loads of stuff. But then Matic, great. You know, they're going to be a big infrastructure by Casper Labs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you can do is say that if they're a good company and a good team, you can do it. But it's hard to understand. It's so technical at the moment.
Yes, sure.
So my advice, anyone who asks me, you know, where should I invest? I say, don't.
Yeah, tread carefully.
You know, because there are tigers everywhere. Be so careful. And just like you can get disinformation and you can be taken down the garden path. Hey, this disinformation costs you money.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah,
so, and there are actually some very good podcasts, like Leah Hepburn, she's very good.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few ones with good followings. Crypto Lark, also very good, gives good advice. You have some influencers on YouTube, you've got some periodicals, but again, for the end user, the retail investor, what tends to happen is that they get the worst deal. So when a company lists, they have, let's say, a crypto company, there's a seed round for institutions where they get the biggest discount, and the private round where the next get discount, and then you get the public round where they get the worst deal, you know? And the appetite is huge. Like I was talking earlier about Casper Labs, great company. 275,000 people did the KYC, sent their money. Only 27,000 people got $1,000 each, you know, small amount.
Yeah.
Now, that's the sheer amount of demand. Imagine how much effort it takes to fill in a KYC form.
Yeah.
That means there must have been about 2 million people trying to come in.
Yeah.
And most of them thought, oh, forget this. But the rest went through the KYC and deposited funds.
Mm.
So, next question. Dubai's come out, and obviously with the Captain's Table, we want to promote Dubai and what they're doing. Dubai's come out and said that we want to be the crypto leaders globally.
Yeah.
What does that mean, and against somewhere else?
Oh, the first thing they're doing is that they're supporting, they're making it easier for crypto companies to operate. A regulated framework still needs to come in.
Yeah.
But the intent is there. And what they're also doing is that they're sort of supporting the arts and crypto arts in general. Like just last week, we did an activation of a new piece of art called Emirati Future by Amrita Sethi, who's an artist here. And she's based here. She's been here for many, many years from a financial background.
Mm.
She then chucked it all in to be an artist, was going to do some stuff at Expo, then COVID hit.
Mm.
And then she's just basically came to... had a chat about what we're doing in NFTs, and she started at $3,000 for a piece of art, which is still a lot, and some small pieces, and she sold her first piece called What the NFT, which is all about the craziness of NFTs, for $101,000 a few weeks ago. And now she's done a piece called Emirati Future, and we did an activation at TODA, And they projected this NFT with animations around all the world, around all the walls. They brought a load of people in from government and from major artists like Saeed, who did the Atlantis murals. And it was just great, and they support it. And mm-hmm. and they're looking at doing really great things, like Dubai Culture is looking at, you know, what can we do to support open air space artwork, you know, let a community fund a piece of artwork, a major artist to create a really lovely piece of art for the community, and then maybe we can do something with that as NFTs. So the government is actively looking for applications of blockchain technology, not just cryptocurrency, blockchain to actually enable and add security to multi levels,
which is what it does, of course.
Yes, it's a ledger you can't miss with.
In simple terms, it's like an escrow of sorts. It's a visible escrow that simply cannot be changed, but altered.
Think of it as a ledger that you can that constantly you're writing into that no one can change any entry.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
So, back again, if I've got a photo at home of myself and Michael Jordan, that I've taken, and I want to turn, and that's a one-off, I want to turn that into an NFT. What do I do?
Well, the first thing that you could do is the first thing is you've got, always got to be very aware of copyright, okay? So it's got to be something that you've taken yourself,
yeah,
and it's got to be something that you own and it's personal and you don't have any gray areas on the copyright. That's the first thing. Because right now, NFTs are like the Wild West. There's so much stuff just going online. Mm. One of the things that we always do is focus on KYC. We always focus on knowing who we're getting the artwork from.
Yeah.
So if you were to do that, what you would do is that, well, we wouldn't touch it as Terravature, as our company, because we deal with brands. And something like OpenSea is more like an eBay or Rarible. So what you would do, you would take it, you would then upload it and mint it.
Mint it. Ted, you were talking about that before.
Yes. So
pay a gas fee.
Exactly. So a gas fee is the price of doing the transaction, right?
Get Ted. He's up to speed on it.
So so we're minting this photo, and you guys got to go back a bit. What are we doing? We're gassing something?
No. Okay. Think of your transaction fee to do it. Sure. Think of it.
But who are you paying that to?
The website. Okay. So think of it like this: when you print a dollar bill. You print a flyer.
Yeah.
You're minting it on a printing press, and you're paying the electricity for it to be done, or a fee to the printer.
Yeah.
Here you're minting your item, which is now converting it to a digital picture.
Yeah.
Giving it associated block room chain record, and you're paying gas, which is like your transaction.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's now it's there and it's up. And then if somebody wants it, they can buy it.
And where do you put it?
So you go to a marketplace. If you go to OpenSea or Rarible,
and there's lots of marketplaces.
There are a few.
Okay.
But those are the two that I would go to if you wanted to do this sort of thing, Rarible or OpenSea, and it's sort of like a flea market.
You put that on there. People are looking through. You put a price on.
Yeah, exactly. Think of it like eBay.
But then you could do a run of it. You can say I want to do 1,000 of these, or I could do 10 of these, or I could do one of these.
Yeah, you can choose.
Okay.
But ultimately, after you mint them, the worst form is for you then to mint them again. All right. Once you do it, you do it. So if you do a 101, you don't make another 101 next week.
Now I'm confused because we're talking about the same.
Well, think about it this way. Okay, if you get Picasso, right, runs a print run of 100 one thing,
sure. And the next week
they sell it, and they sell it for $1,000 for 100. And the next week he's done another 100. It kind of ultimately the value of what you bought for is early. It dilutes.
Exactly. But the thing is that with these other platforms, it's often they don't check who has uploaded it. They don't check if it's authentic.
Yeah.
So really, it's caveat emptor, like you said.
Sure.
You know, because if you buy, let's say, a print by this famous artist, you don't know if it was the artist who uploaded it. You don't know if it's real. You know, and that's it. Caveat emptor.
And with all of this, with the crypto and with the NFTs. Yeah. It's entirely ungoverned at the moment.
Exactly, self governance is coming in.
Yeah.
There's loads of rules that are coming in, and ultimately, look, the companies that do, like, let's say you've got Rarible, they may have, I don't know, 200 artists jumping on. Kids art is a big thing. But with us, we have artists come to us. We curate the best ones. Then we talk to them. Then we make sure they are who we say they are.
Mm.
And then we sell it. I mean, we had one of the top digital artists in the world come to us. And this guy, he doesn't talk. He uses a voice synthesizer. And the fuzzy thing is he can't even see his face. And he goes, I am this guy and I want to sell the artwork on your site. I said, well, no.
We should get him on the podcast. No,
trying to do a Banksy, isn't it?
We should get him on the podcast.
Exactly, and we even spoke to the people representing Banksy. But, like the thing is that...
Oh, yeah, he's going to make a killing.
I could have any other guy come with a fuzzy thing and a fuzzy voice and say, and ultimately, if somebody buys your piece for like $100,000, yes, museums do it and galleries do it, but you know what? We're the ones who are going to get sued. Yes, and ultimately, the customer could then get sued by the original artist for theft.
Yes.
You have to think about these things. It's not just about the money, but it's about making sure the art and the pieces and the works.
Okay.
So I'm just going to quick. Can I nudge
jump in the queue? Take a number.
When you were 47. You touched on it, and we were talking about this before when we were looking at either producing currency or making an NFT.
Uh-huh.
It uses up a lot of energy, right? This is what we're hearing about. How does this work out to the layman? Because I'm still a bit confused about that.
Okay, well, the way that it works is that if you think about, there was a lot of talk about this, and ultimately the main thing that you've got with NFTs is that, and with anything which is done on the Ethereum network, is that they use energy to be created. And...
The phenomenal amount of energy, right?
Well, yeah, it's actually a surprising amount.
Yeah.
It's a surprising amount of energy. Like, when I first heard it, I was like, well, you know, how much does it cost to make a toy? You know? Mm-hmm. Like, if you make an NFT and it's a digital item, people need to have some perspective. I mean, yes, it uses a lot of energy. If you buy a Barbie doll, that's a piece of plastic that's had color and dye and mined and manufactured and melted, and you put in a plastic non-biodegradable package and deliver to your door. That uses a fair amount of energy.
Yeah, exactly.
But when we spoke to some major brands, they go, yeah, that's obvious, but we're not going to say that we're really bad over there. And let's not talk about how that
conversation But then historically, that was unable to be recorded. Now you're able to... record all that, how much energy it took to make that.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what people can. But the main thing is, if I was to take, let's say, a standard Ethereum, creating an NFT, minting an NFT, one NFT would be the equivalent of, and the funny thing is we looked at this the other day, so it is like 20,800 emails. That's how much power it uses to make one NFT, okay? One NFT. But if you use another one, so like we're moving to Polygon, that's two emails. That's the difference you can get by switching away. Because Ethereum, the best way I can describe Ethereum is that, this is important, that everything is on Ethereum. Most NFTs and things on Ethereum. That's called an L1.
It's Ethereum, again, just to keep going back to basics, it's a platform.
Ethereum is a blockchain. It's a platform. It's a blockchain platform.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin has got no utility to speak of apart from owning it. When you create an NFT, when you mint one, it creates one token on Ethereum.
Yes.
Like its own unique coin, okay? But which is linked to an item, let's say your mobile phone. And that is your asset. That's an NFT. So it's one Ethereum token, which is now representing your item. Does that make sense? But then creating that token is expensive and uses a ton of power because it uses a technique called mining, which means that when, you know, we talked about writing into that ledger, every time you write into the ledger, it needs people around the world on their computers to independently verify that you did that.
Yes.
Okay. So that's what mining is. So you basically are confirming a transaction by doing a mathematical algorithm, right? And depending on the amount of power you use, the less power you use, the more you get paid. And you take a fraction of that fee. So that gas fee is actually distributed to the people who are confirming your transaction.
Okay.
Right? And that's why when miners use cheap power, so like El Salvador are saying they're going to use vents from volcanoes to power their mining installation, that means they will actually get paid more and it's completely green. So that's why you have anyone, you're going to create a mining rig, which is a PC and plug into your wall, you're using Dewa and using power.
But let's not get too carried away in terms of the comparative costs and energy used compared to creating the Barbie doll with the plastics and all of that stuff.
That's relative. Everything's relative, but blockchain and Bitcoin has moved to the point where if you have an L1 solution like Ethereum, think of that as Sheikh Zayed Road.
Yeah.
They've now created other blockchains, which I think of one as Al Khail Road,
yes,
which is an L2 solution.
Right.
And you can move off Ethereum, drive onto Al Khail Road, but there the cost is much cheaper. Yeah. Instead of 20,000, you're spending the equivalent of 2,000 emails, two emails. So, and then you can move between the roads.
Okay.
What about Ethereum 2.0? Sorry, guys.
That's right.
Yeah, Ethereum.
That's supposed to be...
Ethereum 2.2. Ethereum 2.0 will effectively solve all of these problems. It is going to be cheap. Think of every chain that you see at the moment. So, like, you've got Ethereum, and then you've got Matic, Casper, Polygon, Elrond, Cardano, lots of different blockchains. And a lot of them are... not Casper, but a lot of them are L2s, like the Al Khail Road ones. Now, Ethereum 2.0 is going to have shards, which is hilarious. But they've got these single shards. And basically, and each shard is effectively what one of these L2s is. They're using less power, right? And they'll be able to run separately as nodes, and it's going to be great. But you know what? It was meant to be out last year, and then it was meant to be out the year before. And it's just, like, I remember in this conversation with our tech team and said, Juard, we don't want to move to another blockchain. Ethereum 2.0 is going to save the world. It's not coming anytime soon. It's just not. But when it does, there will be a shakedown, and that's another investment thing. A lot of these L2s that exist now are all of a sudden going to find it very hard to exist. And that's why some are smart how they're doing it, but the ones who just want to be like a bare Ethereum, you know, God, they don't invest in those ones.
Mm.
Because everyone's going to be running back to Ethereum because that's where all the people are.
I'm just kind of running through all the information, and it's a bit of a minefield, isn't it?
Mm.
Tread carefully, caveat emptor, do your homework, read a lot, good luck.
Yeah, no, definitely. But, like, you know what? This is the sort of paradigm shift we had between, you know, back in the day, people going, oh, you know what, no one's going to want to buy online.
Yeah.
I want to go into the shop, I want to pick it up, I want to look at it, I want to smell it, I want to taste it. And you know what?
It's gone.
It's gone.
Shopping malls are gone.
And we're sort of at the cusp of that now. But, but, like, at the early days of online, no one knew it was coming till it was here. And there is a sea change coming.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
And everything is going to change.
What happens, Jared, when the governments go, oh, well, hold on, we're losing power here. Everybody's taking it away from us. We're not able to control this like we do. And they're going to say, we're going to shut this down.
You know what? It's like what's going to happen is that there's too many other countries who will operate in the gray margins.
Okay.
If they push it out, it'll move somewhere else. It's like prohibition. You know, every time you push it away, it creates a black market. What the smart play is going to be, and you're seeing this, is that if crypto companies can say this is how we want to work, and we will regulate, we will do KYC,
yes,
we will work with you, then the governments need to understand that KYC needs to be done very delicately, because if you do KYC on a person and he's a crypto person and you know who they are and they know who the wallet are, you have instant access to know how much they have in the bank account.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden you're potentially putting that person at risk because kidnap and ransom is an issue.
Mm.
So governments need to find a way to work with crypto companies for people to say, do the AML, do the compliance, make sure that the person is who they say they are, but not necessarily give that information to them. Protect the privacy, but then do what they want, which is make sure it's true. And there are lots of third-party companies, TrueID and a few others, who are focusing all around this.
Okay.
Crucible, great company. And they're focusing on how to deal with AML compliance and make it so that they say, okay, we guarantee that this guy's real. His wallet has never come from
black accounts. It's such a tough thing because you're an entrusted third party.
Mm.
And say, well, the governments will say, well, we can do that. And of course, you get back to square one and say, well, no, thanks very much. I don't want the government knowing everything about it.
But all these third parties are actually, working off a decentralized global standard.
Yes.
So now that information is actually stored securely away,
is
decentralized. It's like, if you want to shut down Bitcoin, you can't. It's everywhere.
They need to have a UN, really, like a universal.
And crypto's huge with that. You know, a DAO. A DAO is what they talk about in crypto.
Yeah.
And that's like a democratic voting organization.
Yeah.
And you'll find multiple DAOs all over crypto, because it's all about community driving community. And yes, there's a lot of nutty idealism. I was in Korea once, and I said to the guy, what are you doing? He said, I'm creating a freestanding island, which is like lots of cargo tins locked together, and it's going to be an independent blockchain state. And I started laughing. I said, no, seriously, what do you want to do? That's actually what he wanted to do.
Sure.
So the whole market's full of nightmares, but there's a lot of idealism in it, and there's a lot of people there trying to make genuine change and trying to focus on letting the little guy actually do well. Because if you look at everything that happens nowadays, every form of thing, transaction you do, it's focused on making the organization richer and not necessarily look after you, from your bank transfer to your mortgage payment anything that you do.
Yeah.
And this is about cutting out the facts and letting investors benefit and letting the customers benefit and not having someone in the middle to having a take.
Well, which is what my question is. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people that won't want this to go through.
Of course they won't. And that's, but you know what? When the stock exchange, before the stock exchange first came out, all companies were the hand of private families.
Okay.
And when the stock exchange came out, everyone and their dog wanted to close them down because it was a massive paradigm shift where the end user could now be part of that.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Now, it happened anyway.
Yeah.
And just because it hasn't happened, the logic is there, and the will is there, and ultimately it's going to be a case of it's either people in crypto need to understand they need to play ball, they need to deal with regulation, they need to protect the interests of the countries, but at the same time the countries need to understand there's too much fat there, things are going to change, everyone needs to meet in the middle.
Right.
Otherwise, stamping something out will force it underground, and if you don't cooperate, you're going to be dead. So find somewhere, the happy middle ground. Find the middle ground.
Yeah.
So where do you see it in the future? Like, I mean, obviously, Elon came out recently and said potentially Tesla, and then he will be able to buy himself with crypto. Then he pulled back.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Money from that.
What are we doing in 10 years' time? How is crypto in our community?
It's everywhere.
You know? But what does that mean for me when I'm walking down the street?
It means that it's just part of everything that you do without you knowing it's crypto. You know, tech is there to enable you, and when it's really working is when you don't notice it. It's when you do a transfer to a mate over a mobile phone and he gets his money instantaneously within seconds and is then able to do something. Yeah. It's if you want to take a mortgage out and then you can go click, 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 it's done, the contract is sent to you. All the hassle.
No boundaries,
no hassle. I mean, look at all of the convenience mobile phones have given us. You know, you've been here for a long time, you know, 20 years odd. And do you remember what it was like back in the day? I needed my passport to go to the toilet. You know, literally.
Have you got your certificate passport? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
Five copies?
Exactly.
How many passport photos you got on you?
But then Sheikh Mohammed went on the stage and he held up a mobile phone
years
ago and said, I want all government to be on this.
Exactly.
And now it
and
is.
Now it is, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's, to take that convenience and then think about the next generation. Take away the other layers.
And that was only, that was what, 5-10 years ago?
Yeah. Exactly.
So, okay.
And the thing is that Dubai is a wonderful city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like there's nowhere else I'd rather live.
Mm.
Yeah, this is, you talk about bright and shiny, but you always see it evolve around you. You don't need to go anywhere. It's always just, and it's full of interesting people. In Dubai, you ask someone where you're from. That's a half-hour conversation.
And don't get me wrong, there is an incredible optimism. It's one of the few places in this world where everyone is looking to the future with an eye open and saying this is going to be great.
Yeah,
no, always.
And that's, to me, that's one of the best things about this place.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's like my girls have grown up here.
Yeah.
They've gone through the education system, you know, they're studying in the UK. And all of the things you have to worry about in the West, you don't have to worry about here. I mean, exactly. We were talking with our CFO today, and like, you were saying, oh, you know, my kids are squabbling a lot. And I was saying, you know what, if it's in the UK, that's the last of the conversation you'd be having. It's like, he's got this and this in the playground. And, you know, it's like,
yes.
You know, it's lovely having the ability to have that safety. You know, leave my wallet and phone in a restaurant, and, you know, I can go back and get it.
Mm.
And even now, you know, there's some bits and pieces that happen here, but it's far safer.
And
it's just beyond that. It's definitely an optimistic place where there's growth and excitement about the future.
Always.
I think that that's a key.
And innovation and embracing innovation is always a key.
Yeah.
And on that note.
No, fantastic.
That's a great way to finish, isn't
great
it?
Great way. Thank you so much for coming on board. But as long as you come back every year, and then we get an update on how it's going.
Sure, no problem.
Fantastic.
Brilliant.
Thanks.
Ted, any questions?
Off screen. It's all good.
Okay.
Good. Right on.
Great.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.